Hello all sentient beings and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we chat with Tyler Blazinski about his upcoming IDW Transformers comic, Transformers Galaxies Constructicons Rising. Today is Friday, September 6th, 2019, and this is episode 145 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that's ready to be devastated by Transformers Galaxies. I'm your host Charles, aka Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Yusuf, better known as Yoshi.
Yo!
Jeremy, aka Yakko.
Hey, how you doing?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hey, how's it going? Let's talk Transformers.
All right, on this special Alt Mode episode, we have the pleasure of talking to one of the newest writers in Transformers comics. He was a co-founder of the sports blog SB Nation, which later grew into the online network Vox Media, and he is also a longtime huge Transformers fan. Now he is working with artist Livio Ramondelli and IDW to tell the definitive story of the Transformers original combiner team, the Constructicons. Please welcome to the show Tyler Blazinski.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me. And I got to say, that was probably the finest introduction and most accurate introduction that I've ever had. So thumbs up on that.
We try to do our research when we have new guests on. So
it's clear that you did.
Why don't we just get started and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started. So for everyone who doesn't know about what SB Nation or Vox Media was.
Sure. So I started basically a blogging company back in 2003. I started it with a single blog about the Oakland Athletics. It was called Athletics Nation. When I started it, I used some technology from one of my friends who basically gave me access to his technology. And I realized that there were other people out there that were kind of doing something similar to what I was doing. So I basically sent out a bunch of random generalized pitch emails to people that basically said, hey, you know, we're probably stronger as a collective as we are as an individual, much like a combiner is. But I didn't actually say that in the email. But I said that to these guys, and it's funny because years later, not to get it too off track immediately, but years later, I had some of our best writers who were still part of the company would come back to me and share with me the generic email that I sent to them and how shitty it was. So I was very embarrassed about it, but it actually worked out very well because we got a lot of really talented people who worked for SB Nation at the beginning. We started as a series of baseball blogs, which eventually kind of grew into we expanded into college sports, into football, into other sports. It grew into SB Nation, gained a bunch of traction. I developed a really close personal relationship with Billy Beane, who was made famous in the Moneyball movie. He did interviews with me that were kind of revolutionary at the time because he would basically sit with me for an hour and a half and we would go off the cuff for an hour and a half and I would run my interview with him basically verbatim. So he would kind of get an unfiltered audience as opposed to dealing with the traditional media. I actually have a background in journalism. I went to school for journalism. I was trained in journalism, but I realized that at least I felt like the objectivity that was kind of being sold in journalism these days is really not real, that there is real no objectivity in journalism because we are subjective creatures. So I just went full hog and just wore my A's fandom on my sleeve, and it gained a lot of traction. I was able to interview Michael Lewis, who wrote Moneyball. I actually still have a good relationship with him and his wife, Tabitha Soren. And it just it mushroomed into a huge company called Vox Media. We brought aboard. I was actually the CEO for the first 5 years of the company. I am so not qualified to be a CEO. So because as I said earlier, my background was in journalism. It was not really in sports. I mean, it was not really in business. We brought aboard a CEO who kind of turned us into a real company. he expanded us out into different verticals, and then from there we wound up becoming extremely successful as Vox Media. And Vox Media basically sold about 40% of its company to NBC Universal about three years ago, I think now. And I exited the company, though I still do a little bit of consulting for them. And at that point, I decided to pursue one of my passions in life, and that was actually Transformers. So that led me to here, led me to pitching IDW incessantly, banging on poor David Mariotte and Tom Waltz's door for about 2.5 years. But I finally was able to squeeze something in where I was like, hey, let me tell the origin story of the Constructicons. And that's kind of how I got to be where I am now. And to be honest with you, I've never written comics before. It's been a new thing for me. It's been fun, but it's also been educational because I've learned a lot about how different comics is kind of as a medium, as opposed to even writing something like a screenplay or even my background, like I said, is in journalism. So it's very different from that as well. So I'm really good at hitting deadlines, but it's been very, it's been an adjustment for me to learn how to write for the comic page. But I'm sorry that was excessively long, but that's kind of my entire history right there.
No, that's perfect. That gives us a lot of interesting detail. So why don't we go back to the beginning of your history with Transformers? So I assume you grew up in the 80s. So were you there like G1 1984 and they kind of imprinted on your brain like they did on the rest of ours? And that's how you got into them?
They did. Like it's one of those things where I was actually, I think I did the math recently because I was on a YouTube show, but I think I was about 12 years old when Transformers first hit. So I was a little bit old for that age because back in the 80s, it wasn't really cool to still be playing with toys when you were 12 years old. It's not like today where you can basically be playing with toys throughout your entire life and nobody really treats you differently for it. But back in the 80s, I was about 12 years old, I think, when Transformers first hit. And honestly, it captured me unlike anything I'd ever been captured by before, because I loved the personalities of the Transformers. I loved the cartoon. I loved everything about it. I read the comics. I was hooked from the very beginning. And the way that my brother and I worked, my brother has basically been a lifelong best friend for me. He's my younger brother, and he collected the Autobots, and I collected the Decepticons. So I was he and I would watch the Transformers together with a vested interest for both sides. And unfortunately, I heard Decepticons retreat way more than he ever heard than the Decepticons ever won anything. But I was very, very much excited and enthralled by the idea of these sentient beings as robots who like basically were humanized. And I didn't really understand it when I was a kid, but as I kind of got older, I realized that the thing that was interesting to me about Transformers, and it's funny because I have a 9-year-old son now and I share this with him all the time. I've been showing him some of the old episodes. We've been kind of making our way through the entire G1 first series. And he hates the episodes that have any sort of human interaction in them whatsoever. And it was funny because when I was a kid, I kind of felt the same way. I was not very much excited by the human interaction. It was always more exciting to me when there was interplay between the robots and the robots themselves were humanized as opposed to the humans becoming a big part of the story. It's exciting to me kind of where the universe is with IDW now because there's not really a human element to it. So I can kind of characterize the Constructicons and give them human qualities as opposed to like having to rely on humans being fodder for them. So I don't know how I got to that answer, but that's basically like it was a big roundabout thing. And Transformers became my number one franchise. It was always, like once I discovered them, they were, even to this day, even I would kill for some sort of related movie to something having to do with the 1986 classic. And I honestly put the Transformers, the movie, the 1986 movie, in my top five movies of all time, because I really think that I know that I have an emotional investment in it, but I think that that movie itself is just absolutely brilliant.
I think you're among good company there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's clear from your answer that that you were soaked into all the G1 stuff in the 80s. So what about going forward? Like, you know, there's now a 35-year history with Transformers. Did you keep up with it after the 80s ended? I mean, I know there was, you know, there's a lot of pressure as we get older and become adults to move away from, you know, put away childish things, as the saying goes. But I know, you know, for all of us, we either kept up with it throughout our whole lives or got sucked back in later on. So what happened with you?
So I'm kind of the sucked back in variety, because what happened was I lost my way with it for a while. I mean, I always thought Transformers were cool, even as I got married and everything else. But the thing that really brought me back to it was I had a son. I tried to introduce my daughter to it. I have an older daughter as well. She's 14. My son is 9. And I tried to introduce my daughter to it. She had little to no interest in it. But when my son, I think he was around 4 or 5 years old, my mother basically found a lot of my 80s toys in her house. And I was like, oh my God, you did. I cannot believe it. So I went like rushing over to her house to pick them up. And I brought them back and showed them to my son. And my son like immediately took to them. And then I started showing him the movies, and I started like getting into all that stuff. It was a very cathartic experience, because now I sit on the floor and I play with my son, and he's 9, and it reminds me of when I was, you know, 12 or 13 years old and sitting on the floor and playing with my brother's 3 years younger than me. So he was about 9 or 10 when we were playing. So it brings and honestly, without getting too emotional or anything, but that was one of the happiest times of my life, when I was sitting on the floor in our living room back in North Andover, Massachusetts, and playing with my brother. I honestly even get teary even thinking about it, because it was like some of the stories that we would come up with and some of the fun that we would have. It was like one of those times where you think back and you didn't have any responsibilities. You didn't have any of these things to take care of. And now that I take care of my son, like, and we play Transformers together, I feel like I'm back again on the floor with my brother. And we're doing, here's the ironic thing about the whole thing, is that my son is a diehard Decepticon because his father is a diehard Decepticon. So guess who has to be the Autobots now? But the glory of this all is that the Decepticons win every time, because I'm willing to lay down and let my son win our battles when we play together. So it's very cathartic, and it brings me back to a time in my childhood where I honestly have nothing but smiles and great memories for that time in my life. So I think that's what toys and great franchises like Transformers can do for you. They can make you feel like you don't have that responsibility anymore. They make you feel like you're that age again, where you don't have bills and you don't have, you know, a water leak in your house, or like whatever it is you have to deal with that week. It's like, God, I'm that kid again. And it feels good to be Devastator and being rolling over Hot Rod or whatever you happen to be doing with your kids at that time. It's just, I don't know. We all, I think, long to get back to that time. And that was part of what was great to me about being able to do this comic book, is that I had all these stories in my mind for years and years and years. Like, I can think back to like when I was playing with my brother, some of these things, some of the elements that I work into my comic book are things that I thought of when I was 13 years old. So it brings me absolute pure bliss and joy to think about bringing it to people.
That's awesome.
When you play with your son the on the ground there, do you use the vintage stuff, or do you go out and buy new stuff?
it's funny because my brother is constantly supporting like us having Autobots. So my brother will send my son a bunch of Autobots for Christmas, but of course I wind up using the Autobots. So he sent us like a classic 80s Prime. So I tried to like use the 1980s Optimus Prime when I battle my son. The problem is his fists come out and his gun never stays in properly and his head flips back and he's like, he's just not a, he's an 80s toy. Yeah. So recently, like I went down to a toy shop down in San Diego and I bought the Siege Optimus Prime just because, and it felt a little dirty to do it because I'm a Decepticon, but I bought it because I want something that I can actually play with my son with without it, the thing falling apart when we actually play. So we have used the 80s guys. I will tell you that my favorite 80s toy is probably Blitzwing because he's sturdy. He's very easy to transform and like he's not something that like comes apart very easily. Because my son really likes to do the bang the toys together kind of battle, like where you're
sure,
where you're like smacking them. Oh, I got a great story too. So I start pulling out all my toys for my son, like from the 80s, when my mom gives me this container, this Tupperware that has all these things in it, and I start pulling out all these toys, and I pull out my Shockwave from the 80s, and I'm like, oh damn, I remember this thing used to make noise, and it used to be really cool and everything. And I pull down on the trigger on it, and it works. I'm like,
the batteries are still good.
The batteries were kind of like, but I put another 9-volt in it, and literally, like the minute that I put another 9-volt in it, it works perfectly. It was spectacular. Awesome. But I mean, some of them were made obviously better than others were, and clearly the 1980s Devastator. Even back then, I remember being disappointed when I got the toy because he wasn't nearly the size that I wanted him to be, and he didn't stay together whenever my brother and I would play together. So it was, and I tell my son, because I've kind of built my son the dream room that I would have had when I was his age, like, and he's got like the shelving everywhere, and he's got like the Unite Warriors Devastator, and he's got like the Hasbro Devastator, and he's got all these different things. And I look up, sometimes I lay in bed with him and I look up at his shelves and I say, man, you better appreciate what you have, because this is like, this is, you live in golden times, my friend. And he doesn't understand, but maybe someday he will.
Since you recently got back into Transformers, did you read any of the previous IDW Transformers comics?
I actually did. And when I say recently, you know, my son's 9 now, so it's been about 3 or 4 years since I got back into it. So it wasn't like it was yesterday. But I started picking up some of their hardcover stuff because clearly I missed a lot of it. And I got to tell you, like some of the ones like All Hail Megatron were like – really, really inspired me. Like, and then there was a Megatron origin story that was kind of like he was part of the proletariat rising up against the bourgeoisie, and it was like it was a beyond amazing story. And I was like, holy shit! Like they've done this remarkable stuff with some of these beautiful characters that I grew up with, and it inspired me to read more. Although I do got to tell you, and I've mentioned this in previous discussions with people, but the incident where they killed Scrapper really like kind of set me down this path where I needed to set things right. So I was not happy with how Scrapper went out at all. Like I was like, really, Spike of all people, like really. So
you're not alone in that. Sentiment there.
yeah, it very much like inspired me, like I need to rewrite this history. And I pitched IDW for about 2.5 years, maybe even a little longer, because I was trying to fit in with their old continuity, but it wasn't really jiving with what they were doing. Like nothing seemed to fit. I was, believe it or not, I pitched them some stories on trying to bring Scrapper back and, and, uh, like, like trying to reform Devastator, like with like the inspiration to go kill Spike. Like that's how it wound up being. And I didn't really like, I right off the top of my head, I can't think of the other character they brought in that was like kind of a religious zealot.
Scoop.
Scoop, yes. So I wasn't, and then they had Prowl even as a part of Devastator at some point. So the purist in me was like, oh my God, we need to rectify this. So I was pitching them on, and it wasn't just Devastator stories. I pitched them on some Seeker stuff because Seekers have always been my favorite. My very first Transformer was Skywarp. So I was pitching them on a lot of that stuff, but none of it seemed to work out. And then when they decided to blow up the universe and start anew, it was a great opportunity for me to tell this standalone, basically Constructicon origin story, which was a huge inspiration to me because the Constructicons were always one of my very favorites. And to have the honor to be able to tell kind of how they come to be was just still to this day, I'm pinching myself. Like, I cannot believe that I'm able to do this because fictional wise, this is like my ultimate dream story to be able to tell.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. So you mentioned that you've been pitching this for a few years, and so this is your first entry into comics. So how did you wind up working with artist Livio Remondelli?
You know, honestly, Livio is one of the best people I've ever met in my life, and that's not hyperbole. I'm not exaggerating or anything. He's just an awesome human being. Like there have been times where I've been frustrated and like about something or whatever, not related to the comic, but about something else, and I've been like, oh, this sucks or whatever, and he's just such always a positive presence. He's just such a great dude, and on top of it all, he's an incredible artist. And I actually met him, I'm gonna guess it was probably about 2 years ago now at WonderCon. So okay. WonderCon is like, for those who aren't familiar, it's sort of like a mini Comic-Con that happens in Anaheim, at the Anaheim Convention Center, so not far from Disneyland. I went with my son because we were looking for some Transformers stuff and like just wanted to like check it out. We've never been before, and some of our friends were they spoke very highly of WonderCon in general. And literally the first thing that we did was we walked inside the doors of WonderCon, and right to the right of us was Livio Remondelli. So I introduced myself to him. I told him, hey, I've been pitching IDW for like quite a while now. I've been really wanted it. And he's like, oh, I've heard of you. Like I've heard you've had some good story ideas. And I told him, like, honestly, I just would love if you looked at some of my story ideas and gave me some feedback or whatever. And he looked at them. He thought they were great. And I said, you know, even if they don't wind up like doing anything with me, I would love to like pay you for a commission for something from one of our stories, from one of the stories I've already written. And he agreed to do it. I mean, I paid him, of course, but we developed a relationship from there. It was basically Devastator. It was a story about the Constructicons, but it was basically about Devastator trying to punch Bumblebee as Bumblebee was trying to escape. So he did like a commission for me. It came out absolutely beautiful. We developed a relationship from there. I paid him again later on because my son's very favorite is Predaking. He loves the Predacons. And so he did another Predaking for me. And then later on, like, again, we just developed a great relationship. We had lunch together a couple times. We just developed, and I told him about my story idea moving forward. And he's like, I would love to be the artist for it. And he's like, I've never had the chance to draw a proper Devastator because when IDW brought me in, Devastator was kind of like, he was missing his leg and he had Prowl, and it was a messed up situation. So it wasn't really like the origin story Devastator. And so when I was pitching IDW, I basically said, I want Livio Remondelli to be the artist on this because he's phenomenally talented, and he and I have a great working relationship already. and they basically agreed to it because he had a phenomenal track record. And I think, honestly, IDW was like, if we're going to do this newbie writer, we probably need somebody who has like a legendary track record. So that's kind of what they did, I think. And honestly, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass or anything, he's been an absolute dream to work with. He's been, and I've used this before, but he's become like a brother to me through this process. I can text him anytime, day or night, and just ask him, hey, I'm kind of going through this with the story. Like, what do you think of this? And he'll give me some honest, helpful feedback. That's been great. And I honestly believe that when you guys get the first issue in your hand and as you go through the series, you will see the chemistry that, Livio and I have had throughout this series, because I've never been through this before, so I can't speak from personal experience, but I will tell you that it's been an absolute honor to have him as a part of this and to have him draw all four issues, to have him do I think he's done all four covers. He's even done like a variant cover for Torpedo Comics where we're doing a signing later in September, but he's just been a dream to work with. Like if I need something that needs to be tweaked or whatever, he never takes it personally. It's like, it's just been incredible. Like we honestly, it would be like me doing this with my younger brother. Like that's how much of a connection I really feel like I have with him.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. We're big fans of Livio too. We actually, we just saw him again at TFCon Toronto, about a month and a half ago. And
him in New York, at New York Comic Con too.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be there later this year. I know that.
Yeah. And he had a lot of praise for you. At least he said basically you brought him back into doing Transformers comics with the passion you had for this story. So.
And that's been fantastic about it, honestly. And then he's been super excited about everything because for me, it's all new. Like, honestly, a lot of this is brand new and I've been willing to do whatever I can to make sure that it's a success because I want to be able to do more with this franchise. For me, it's like, I might've grown up with the comics that I started reading when I was a kid was really Spider-Man. Spider-Man was my number one. But as I got older, Transformers became my number one franchise, like beyond anything else. And for somebody as talented as him to be able to do some of this stuff, it just makes me excited. Every time I remember when I saw the very first issue, he sent me the whole thing like before any of my dialogue was put in it or anything. And I really got emotional just looking at it because it felt like, this guy knows exactly what I'm talking about. He knows exactly what I want to have happen in the story. He knows how to draw it. He knows how to execute it. And I'm not quite sure that had I been assigned to somebody else, if it would have happened the same way, if the chemistry would have been there. And I think that's a big part. Now, I mean, from the outside looking in of comics is like whether or not the writer and the artist are going to completely jive together and want to create the same atmosphere.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the story. I mean, I know we don't want to spoil anything since the issues aren't out yet, but can you give us your elevator pitch for what this story is about for the Constructicons? You mentioned it's an origin story.
So, I mean, some of the stuff is actually already hit. Like, I know today, Comic Book Resources put out, I think, like the first 8 pages or maybe 6 pages of the issue, but it's basically, honestly, the Constructicons are basically isolated and kind of put aside from Cybertron, and they kind of have to find their own path. Like, they're these incredible builders who have this renowned history of being able to rebuild things and being able to do things that basically other Transformers can't. In my story, they basically rebuild Iacon. They do it in a way that's spectacular, that like nobody's ever seen before. And it's it 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 resonates with everybody. But then they're basically sent off to create an Energon processing facility on a remote planet, and they're kind of stuck there. And it takes them a little while to kind of figure out, like, they're not particularly happy about being where they're at. So they're kind of not in a great situation. And really, the key to me is when I watched the Transformers when I was a kid, one of my favorite episodes, because I was a Constructicons fan, was The Secret of Omega Supreme. Clearly, let me just say up front, Omega Supreme is not involved in this story. I've had that question quite a bit, but I will tell you right now, this is a different origin story, mostly because I want the Constructicons to have the freedom of choice. And whereas I think in The Secret of Omega Supreme, maybe due to time constraints or whatever happened back in the day, like, they didn't have their freedom of choice. They had the Robo Smasher that basically turned them evil. I want them to be able to make the choice about their own destiny and their own future. And that, to me, was the most important, because I think fiction has changed over the years. If you look back at the 80s, it was good versus evil. It was USA versus USSR. And that was reflected in kind of our fiction. And that's why you saw the Decepticons being pure evil. I think as fiction has changed over the years, we've gotten anti-heroes like Tony Soprano, like Walter White, like some of these people that are just phenomenal characters. As we've developed more shades of gray in our fiction, and that's reflected real life. And that's kind of what I've been aiming for with the Constructicons, where they may become bad eventually, but maybe you understand kind of why they become bad. And that was really kind of the goal of going into this thing, as to seeing maybe they started down a certain path, but they wound up down a different path because they felt like they had no choice and they were kind of forced into it. And then you root for them, even though they might do bad things, because you relate to either their alienation or their isolation. So that was really the elevator pitch for my story. I mean, granted, that had to be a really long elevator because I talked quite a bit. But that was really, for me, that was kind of it for me. Like, that was – I wanted little more shades of gray to be a little more succinct about it, as opposed to the black and white of the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, another thing that's difficult, at least from the old Transformers series, is that the combiner teams – usually you only get a little bit of characterization on maybe one or two members. Like, the full team usually tends to get overshadowed by the fact that they can turn into a bigger robot. So how do you work on balancing giving each character a chance to shine in the story with, you know, bringing in Devastator and the fact that they combine? We got a little taste of that with some of the character profiles that IDW released this week. But I was just curious how you work that into the story.
I honestly try to, when you read any bit of dialogue in any of my stories, like, moving forward, there is a specific reason why each Constructicon says exactly what they do. So when you read when you pick it up on September 25th, when it finally hits the comic shops, I think what you'll want to do is you'll want to, like, pay attention to everything that every single one of the Constructicons says at any given time, because it gives an insight to each one of their characters. The one thing from an outsider's viewpoint looking in, since, you know, I'm not trained as a comic writer, is that I tried to use every single line of dialogue with Scavenger to try and explain why Scavenger is saying the things he is, like, because he's insecure and he's the youngest, and, like, he wants to make sure that he's a valued member of the team, like, kind of like he's trying to, like, fit in that sense, and trying to make sure that he's valuable, even though clearly he's super valuable because his shovel has the ability to detect things that none of the other Constructicons can do. So, like, when you do it, I mean, I implore people that when you pick up Transformers Galaxies, Constructicon Rising, like that you read it in the sense of trying to understand that every single line that they use, because it is a little bit there's constraints because it's only four issues. There's only 20 pages per issue. So anytime anybody says anything in the issue, there's a specific reason why I have in my head as to why Scrapper is saying what he's saying. I tried to create Scrapper in a way that, like, he's a humble yet really powerful leader for this group, and they kind of picked him almost immediately because of his presence and the way that he handles them. And honestly, like, I tried to give each one of them quite a bit of personality as opposed to, like, just assuming they are how they are. So when you read any of the dialogue, you understand as to why they're saying what they're saying, and you try and pick up some of the personality from any of that dialogue. Like I said, it's a bit limiting, but when you see Devastator first form, you understand that maybe he doesn't have the first – he's not necessarily the Devastator that you knew in the past. Like, Devastator came to be, and he came to combine for the first reason – for a reason that you'd never seen before. Like it was in a particular circumstance, it seemed to make sense. So he's never been presented in this way. And I honestly thought it was a natural extension of the Constructicons for Devastator to be introduced the way that he is. So let me just put it that way. And I know that sounds very vague, but I don't want to spoil it for anyone. So when you get that first issue and you flip it open and you see them combined for the first time, you'll be like, oh, now I understand. And it makes total sense that he's this way for the first reason.
So it's not to put the sun focusing sphere on top of the power tower?
I'm not trying to rip off anyone else's story. So let me just put it that way.
I guess more of a kind of a meta question. So what do you want, like, Transformers fans and fans of the Constructicons to take away from your story? You mentioned giving the Constructicons that freedom of choice that they didn't really have back in the 80s in the G1 cartoon. Is there anything else that, like, any big theme that you want people to take away from this story?
The biggest thing that I probably want people to take away is that sometimes by alienating the biggest fear that you might have might make that fear become reality. So I know that's super vague, but but really, that's for me, I'm trying to relate it to the times that we live in these days, and understanding that that sometimes if fear is the biggest motivator that we have, it sometimes is our biggest doom. I know that, again, I'm sorry to be so vague, but you guys don't have the issues yet. So, but honestly, that's really, I am trying to get a message across, and sometimes there's a better path to go as opposed to going the fear path.
Okay.
When you listen to this, after you have all four issues, you'll completely understand what I'm talking about. So,
okay.
I know that's like December that you'll have the final issue, but maybe I'll do another podcast with you then, and I completely open up about exactly what we're talking about.
Sure, that would be great. We can definitely pencil that in. Yeah, awesome. So you mentioned since you've been pitching this for a while, you started trying to get it into the previous IDW continuity. Now you're working in this brand new universe. So how did you coordinate your story with IDW and maybe also with Hasbro to fit it into this new continuity? I mean, in particular, the current continuity, we still don't have the war starting yet. We still actually don't even have Decepticons yet. So I'm wondering how you're fitting in the Constructicons here.
Well, basically what they did was they sent me some issues ahead of time about what was coming. And honestly, my story is it's interrelated to what's going on Cybertron. It's not necessarily exactly, like, it's not dependent on what's going on Cybertron. There are definitely threads that it intertweave that intertwine with each other. But honestly, I think that I did use one of the characters that Brian Ruckley actually brought into it. And I think it's not any big surprise, like, from anybody who's seen any of the basically the new tech specs or any of the previews or anything, is that Termagax is actually involved in the Constructicon story that I tell. And it made sense for her, in a sense, to kind of be a little bit of a catalyst for some of the things that transpire in my story. So there is definitely interwoven threads, but it is very much a standalone story. So I think even if you don't follow the main continuity, you would understand kind of what was happening if you picked it up. There are quite a few flashbacks. I mean, I think even one of my issues, I think it's maybe issue 3, that's almost 100% flashback to kind of the beginnings of things, which is, I did it purposely that way to kind of be a pace setter for how the story evolves, to make issue 3 kind of a, I don't want to call it a palate cleanser, but it's a little bit of a palate cleanser and a little bit of an explainer for what you might be prepared for issue 4. But it's kind of like a little bit of a flashback to what things are going. But there's a lot of like flashing back to the beginning of Cybertron, to where the Constructicons are now, stranded on this remote planet. And it's just it's just been, like I said, it's been fun to kind of develop how the story is going to evolve. And my whole goal, honestly, has been to show people the Constructicons in different states of not only distress, but at times where they were also kind of hailed as heroes. You see them in different states at different times, depending on which issue you're picking up. So, like I said, issue 3 is very much like kind of, damn, these guys are pretty awesome, but yet they're also pretty damn scary. So, like I said, I'm trying to be as vague as possible and also make it interesting for you guys, but because, like I said, I don't want to spoil it before you guys get any of the issues. So,
well, maybe I can veer us more away from some spoiler stuff. I want to go back and talk about your working with Livio for a second. In the previous continuity, Livio worked on a trilogy of books, Autocracy, Primacy, and Monstrosity, with Flint Dilley and Chris Metzen. I think towards the end of that, he was actually helping contribute to like plot ideas, and he was more than just an artist. He was actually, helped shape the story. Is he doing any of that with you based on his, his experiences? Is he like suggesting plot ideas and, kind of saying, you're doing this, but maybe these characters should be over here doing this thing?
No, actually, he's been very kind of hands off with the plot. Although there have been times where he'd been like, okay, so we need maybe a panel here to explain this more, mm-hmm. or whatever. But honestly, it's been almost 100% my plot and my story. Livio's been extremely encouraging in terms of, like, because honestly, the way that him and I have worked so far, it's been, I've been sending him, I've been writing plot outlines of how things should go, and he will absolutely like say that, okay, this is great, this is perfect, this is what we need to do. Like recently I actually just finished the plot outline for issue 4, and I sent it to Livio before I ever sent it to IDW, because I respect him so much and I wanted to get his opinion and see if it's like, this doesn't make any sense, like you need to back off on this or whatever. But he's been nothing but encouraging. He's been
so he's more helping on the art of comics,
yes, he's been absolutely phenomenal. Like my biggest issue so far as a newbie to this has been figuring out dialogue and like having to like work with like dialogue constraints in terms of like spacing and and trying to figure out like what fits in certain panels and whatnot, and trying to say something more succinctly than maybe I would say it ordinarily. So, right. And that comes down to the IDW people as opposed to Livio, because Livio's been nothing but like I said, absolutely encouraging, and he thinks, as far as he sees everything before even IDW does, and he's been nothing but an absolute positive. And he recently told me that he is absolutely stoked to get going on issue 4, because I gave him basically like 5 or 6 pages to basically go hog wild with certain stuff. So he's really excited to be able to just have total creative freedom of about what he's doing on those 5 pages. So
awesome.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap things up a little bit, but do you have any plans for upcoming conventions? Like, will you be at New York Comic Con or maybe even the TFCon DC this fall?
You know, my son's trying to talk me into going to TFCon in DC, and I keep trying to tell him, dude, it's 2 plane tickets. It's like it's like a hotel room. It's like. But he's really gung-ho on going to TFCon, and he really gets a kick out of the fact that suddenly people want to talk to me at these conventions. So, we've been talking about possibly going to TFCon. I don't think we'll be going to New York Comic Con, because we definitely did San Diego Comic Con. But we're looking at possibly going to TFCon DC for sure, just because he's been very gung-ho about. He told me that earlier this year that TFCon in Burbank was the greatest couple of nights of his life. So, and he's 9 years old, so he's playing the guilt card really well, I got to tell you. So I'm really considering going to TFCon in DC just because. He's been and you know the funny part about it, he's been, I don't know if you guys play TCG at all, the Transformers trading card game, but he's really into the trading card game, and we spent most of our time at TFCon in the trading card game room, and he like wound up beating quite a few adults at playing the game and he's been very like excited about going back and like being able to beat some more adults. So I mean, I'm considering doing it just because, you know, YOLO, but, and honestly, it's probably, TFCon falls kind of in the middle of my run. So we'll like, I think the second issue will be out about the time that, I'll be at TFCon in DC. So he'd be pretty stoked to see his dad signing some autographs and stuff. Yeah, yeah. But
do be aware that DC is a lot smaller than Burbank was.
It's a lot smaller than Burbank.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Burbank was kind of like a one-off, trying to get all these voice actors and stuff there.
Yeah. I can't imagine they'll have the voice actors and stuff. Oh, one of the things that I'm like super excited about was I was able to meet Greg Berger and God, I can't think of the guy who played Scrapper. Like my son has this really cool Devastator lithograph hanging over his bed that's got 3. Is it Neil Rogers? Am I thinking of the
Neil
name?
Ross?
Neil Ross, yes. Yeah. He's got like. That hanging over his bed with like all of these guys who signed it. Of course, I don't know Frank Welker, or I think there's like one other guy who was like an original Constructicon voice as well, that we missed. But I'm imagining that they probably won't be at TFCon DC.
Before any of our listeners jump down our throats, Michael Bell is the voice of the original voice of Scrapper.
Yes, thank you, Michael Bell. And I will tell you that the coolest person that we met the entire time at TFCon in Burbank, I mean, Greg Berger was outstanding. He was super funny. Like, but I will tell you the coolest person we met was Arthur Burkhart.
He adopted Charles at TFCon a couple of years ago.
Oh my God, that guy is a that guy is amazing. Like, he is so, like, he's so embracing his past, whereas some of these guys were, it kind of felt like, yeah, just like swipe your credit card to get my autograph or whatever. Like, he stood up and he did like a line with my son, and he was so into it, and my son was like blushing and turning different colors because he did like prepare for extermination with him. And it was like one of the best moments, because my son and I have watched, like, my son will watch the episodes with me, the TV show series, but he actually loves the movie. Like, I love the movie. Like, it's the movie is on a different level compared to the TV show. We honestly both think that the moment that Galvatron kills Starscream might be our favorite movie, and our favorite movie moment in any movie ever. But honestly, like, if we watch some of that stuff together, it's just, he's really into the movie. He could probably quote it to you from beginning to end. Whereas with the TV show, he'll get on his iPad or he'll get distracted. Like, we recently watched like The Girl Who Loved Powerglide, and then God, I can't think of the, was it Sea Change? The one where Sea Spray kind of like becomes a mermaid or something, like a merman.
Yeah, I think that was Sea Change. Yeah.
Yeah. So we watched those two episodes, and my son was looking at me like, dude, what is with like the robot suddenly in love with a woman? Like, what is the deal with this? Like, so, but no, the movie itself honestly is such a standalone. And honestly, that was the best treatment of Devastator we ever had. Like, as a Constructicon fan, like, they made him into something where people were like in awe of him. Like, where Daniel climbed the ladder and said, "Oh my God, Cup, look." And then Cup walks up and says, "Devastator." It's like they realize he was a weapon of mass destruction, basically. Whereas, like in the cartoon itself, he was such a, like, somebody needed to hit him in the right spot, and then suddenly he sucked. So, like he would disassemble into his six parts. Like, yeah, there was always some excuse as to why he wasn't as powerful as he was, but in that movie, he was just such a force for destruction that it was amazing. And then the movie itself, like, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but the movie itself was like a seminal moment for me, because if you guys think about it, and maybe you've talked about this before, but no Autobot had ever died before. It was like, and then suddenly they go into the Autobot shuttle, and Prowl dies, and Brawn dies, and Ratchet dies. Like, it's just like their eyes are smoking with fire. It was like the most incredible, amazing thing to me as a Decepticon fan. Whereas I think that took my fandom to a whole nother level that I had never experienced before, because the TV show itself had become boring, because, like I said, every episode ended with Decepticons retreat. So like the movie itself would become like this, and even when Rodimus Prime defeats Galvatron, all he does is throw him out of Unicron. It wasn't like he had, you know, killed Galvatron or anything. So as a Decepticon fan, the movie was completely and totally placating to my fandom of the fiction and of how Transformers kind of became themselves. I really honestly think the movie, I would love to see Hasbro recreate something along the lines of the 1986 movie again, even with like better animation and better voice acting. I've always thought Liam Neeson would be perfect, and perfect as a Transformers voice, but I honestly think that they need to recreate something animated with Transformers that would become absolutely ginormous, because it's not just me. It's like when I go to my son's elementary school and I talk to the other dads, they're all Transformers fans too. They all grew up right around the same age that I did. So they want to see their franchise reinvigorated, and it's not like the Michael Bay stuff. Or and as good as Bumblebee was, like, people want the Cybertron scene, like, as a 90-minute movie, as opposed to like just a 5-minute movie, 5-minute scene, and another standalone movie. Yeah. That to me is like the future of the franchise and where it needs to go moving forward, because we can share it with our kids. Like, whether it's your son or your daughter or whatever it is that you have, like, you want to be able to share this thing that you loved as a kid with your future generations. And that to me is partially why I got into comics, because I wanted to be able to like share the passion for these incredible Constructicons and their lime green colors and their purple accents and their ability to become one as a unit, as a whole new story that like a whole new generation would love the same way that I loved as a kid.
You're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
So I guess, are you looking forward to the Netflix series? I mean, that should scratch a little bit of that itch.
I am. I know I met Brandon, one of the writers at San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm pretty excited about what they're going to be. Brandon Easton. Mm-hmm. He's writing the I think he's writing an Ultra Magnus TF Galaxies later yes. on. And he's one of the writers for their Siege War for Cybertron series. And I'm pretty excited about it. I think they're going to understand kind of where we're coming from. I have very optimistic, happy hopes about it, that maybe somebody will recapture what we felt as kids when we saw these first robots that could transform into these really cool things that were existing in our real lives.
So final question. So now that you've done this Constructicon miniseries, and I know Transformers Galaxies going forward is going to focus on other individual characters or groups of characters, is there any other character or set of characters you'd like to tackle in the future?
I have actually a great idea about the Predacons. And I think it could actually relate to the situation that the Constructicons are in right now. So whether or not IDW goes for it or not is another issue altogether. I suppose it probably depends on how well received some of the Constructicons stories are. But honestly, I've got tons of ideas, not just about them. I mean, one of my very favorites growing up, and I mentioned this before, was Blitzwing. I would love to tell a Blitzwing story down the road. One thing that I did notice at San Diego Comic-Con is that, sure, they start with the Constructicons, but then like they go to Cliffjumper, they go to RC, they go to Springer in terms of the galaxies. We need to get back to having some individual stories told about the Decepticons in general. That's kind of my hope, is that I can provide, because I mean, I'm a Decepticon at heart, so I'd love to tell interesting, compelling Decepticon stories that would relate to their audience and the G1 people that grew up with it like I did. And I really, my honest to God hope for my series is not just that it will relate to the people that are my age, but honestly, like something that they can share with their kids, like something that they can say, hey, check it out. This is a pretty cool story about this interesting group that like become something bigger than themselves down the road. And I'm hoping that it can be a generational thing, and that the Constructicons, and not just the Constructicons, but the Decepticons in general, can get their just due as not necessarily as black and white, USSA, USSR kind of group, but that they can also be shades of gray, and you can relate to them, and you can kind of understand and maybe not necessarily root against them the way that you did, but kind of understand why their motivations are where they are. And like I said, I've got a great idea about the Predacons. My son is a huge fan of the Predacons and is hoping that
they will come into the IDW universe, but it's a little bit tricky to kind of figure out how to work in like a lion and a rhino and and a bull and all these other things when they're not necessarily located on Earth. So that's always kind of like the catch 22 on how to figure out how to work them in.
Well, in this new continuity, they do have organic life on Cybertron, so, you know.
Yeah, and the planet that they're located on right now has a bit of organic life as well, so there might be a connection there.
Yeah. All right, well, before we let you go, we for all our interview guests, we like to run through a set of rapid-fire questions. These are kind of just either-or, quick yes-or-no questions, just to get a sense of your general thoughts and feelings on a variety of different topics. So we'll try to speed through them really quick, and then we'll let you go.
Sure.
All right. Well, starting off, I think we all know the answer to this question now: Autobot or Decepticon?
Decepticon.
And who is your and who is your favorite Decepticon?
Oh, I would probably say Scrapper.
Okay. Transformers live action movie 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or Bumblebee?
Bumblebee.
Not surprising there.
Yeah, like the other ones. I mean, one was okay, but honestly, after that, it became a train wreck.
Transformers comics: More Than Meets the Eye / Lost Light, Robots in Disguise / Optimus Prime, Till All Are One, or the new continuity Transformers?
Oh God. I guess I would have to say Lost Light.
All right. Third-party toys, yes or no?
Well, I got to say the new Blitzwing they're coming out with fan toys is pretty damn awesome. So I would say yes, but honestly, most of the time I go with Hasbro.
Okay. Cats or dogs?
Oh, God. When I was younger, it would be dogs, but probably now it would be cats. I've got a great damn cat who is like Mr. Personality. So,
coffee or tea?
Coffee for sure.
Chicken or steak?
Steak, but it's so damn bad for the planet. But I,
it's so good.
I love steak.
Pepsi or Coke?
Coke for sure, especially Mexican Coke.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Amen.
No high fructose corn syrup, right?
Exactly. Mexican Coke is the best Coke on the planet.
Burger King or McDonald's?
God. Well, I worked at Burger King for 3 years in high school, so I'd probably have to say Burger King.
All right. History or science?
Oh, God. History. I don't know. Both of them are very important, so it's very difficult for me to say. But if we don't study history, we're doomed to make the same mistakes we did in the past. So,
yep. Xbox, PlayStation, or Switch?
Xbox for sure. I'm a Halo guy from beginning to end.
Maybe also Gears of War?
Considering my brother developed it, yeah.
PC or Mac?
Talk about dropping a nugget of information, man. Jeez.
What was that question? I'm sorry.
PC or Mac?
I used to be a heavy PC guy, but my business partner in Box was a huge Mac guy, so I got transferred to a Mac guy. But honestly, I wish that I was still a PC guy.
iPhone or Android?
I'm on an iPhone, but again, I really wish that I probably hadn't gone iPhone.
Well, is there a phone app that you can't live without?
Transformers Earth Wars.
Oh, okay.
I'm on it every damn day, all damn day. And it like is a source of contention in my marriage. So there you go.
Marvel or DC?
Oh, God. So Marvel is definitely better. But my God, I love Batman. And the latest iteration of Wonder Woman is like beyond anything that any comic book story has ever done. So I don't know, that's probably walking the line of both, but that's kind of where I am.
Okay. Well, okay. Then who is your favorite superhero character from either place?
You know, honestly, my favorite comic book probably of all time has been Venom. I love, love, love Venom. He was one of those very impressionable ones when I was a kid. The movie kind of like wasn't great, but I love Venom as a character just because he was kind of like quintessential anti-hero. And I loved the symbiosis and all of the other stuff. I've actually used that term in the past in terms of how Levio and I work together is we're kind of symbiotic. So I guess he's probably Eddie Brock, and I'm probably the really dark the dark symbiote that encompasses him. So
Stallone or Schwarzenegger?
Definitely Schwarzenegger. I love the Rocky movies, but Arnold is my friend.
Pixar or DreamWorks?
Pixar for sure.
Is there a guilty pleasure movie that you'll always watch whenever you see it?
This might sound lame, but I absolutely love Collateral, the Michael Mann movie. And anytime that it comes on, it drives my wife crazy because she'll be like, "You're watching freaking Collateral again?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm watching Collateral again." So it's one of my very favorite movies. And as nuts as Tom Cruise has come across, he's still a freaking phenomenal actor. So absolutely love that movie.
All right. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars, hands down.
Simpsons, Family Guy, or Rick and Morty?
Simpsons, for sure, even though my brother is good friends with Justin Roiland. So I'll still say Simpsons just because it's what I knew growing up. So not growing up, but like in my early 20s and whatever. Simpsons was great.
Walking Dead or Game of Thrones?
That's a tough question. I definitely say Game of Thrones because Walking Dead went off the rails long ago and Game of Thrones only went off the rails in like the last season. So
NFL, MLB, NHL, NBA, or UFC?
NHL.
Yeah.
I'm a big time New Jersey Devils fan, and I've never been as excited about a hockey season since like the early 2000s. So I'm absolutely primed for the NHL to get started.
You and me both.
Yeah.
Porsche, Ferrari, Lamborghini, or VW Beetle?
Can I go off the board and say Infiniti?
Sure.
I honestly, if I ever had to get a car right now, I'd probably get a Tesla because I freaking detest getting gas. So a Tesla or some kind of electric vehicle, even in like a Nissan Leaf or something. Like I hate getting gas. It's like getting my nails pulled every time I get it. So,
dude, a Leaf would suck in the wintertime, man.
Well, you know what? I live in Southern California.
What
so.
Winter?
We don't really have winter here. So
wait, do you not have a car?
I do. I have a car.
Oh, okay.
Again, he lives in Southern California, Daryl.
Right.
I actually have a custom Devastator bike, believe it or not. I don't know if you guys follow cycling at all, but I have a custom Devastator bike that's painted by the guy who did Peter Sagan's bike, who Peter Sagan is like a world-renowned cyclist who's won a bunch of world championships and stuff.
Nice. Wow, awesome. All right, last question. Blonde, brunette, or redhead?
Oh, definitely brunette. My wife is beautiful Mexican woman, so no hesitation on that one for me.
All right, well, you've passed the gauntlet, you've gone through the fire, and those are the rapid fire questions.
Thank you guys for having me. I honestly, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for joining us, and we will definitely have you back when the 4-issue series for the Constructicons is over, and then we can maybe do a post-mortem and really dig into all those details that, you know, the hints that you dropped now that we can't really expand on right now, but as soon as all the issues are out, we can have you back.
I would be very, very, I mean, it would be honestly my honor to be able to go over some of the things that happen in some of the issues and why they happen. So
All right. Well, yeah, thanks again for having us on. Other than Transformers Galaxies, is there anything else you want to plug, like where people can find you on social media, anything like that?
Sure. I've never been a huge Twitter fan up until recently because, you know, I've seen bad things by it, but I've been tweeting a lot more than I had in the past. If you want to follow me, I started today, since today is September 1st, I've started today, like, kind of tweeting a photo of my Devastator fandom. If you want to follow some of the things that I do on Twitter, it's at Poppy Blez, PAPIBLEZ that's basically like the two most important things in my life. My last name is Blazinski, so it's BLEZ. Poppy is what my children call me. So that's why that's my Twitter name. I'm also at Instagram on that as well, although you might have to deal with quite a few family photos on there. So apologies for that. Apologies for that. But if the best place to follow me is probably Twitter. Like I said, I like try and post as many updates as I can about the series and whatnot. And honestly, the best thing that you can possibly do is pre-order the series. Apparently, comic books are a lot like video games, and that, like, the more pre-orders you get, the better it is for the business. So if you call your local comic book shop and then let them know that you want Transformers Galaxies Constructicons Rising, which comes out September 25th, that would be great. They'll reserve some for you. And that's, I hope, honestly, that it scratches an itch for you guys, because that's really what I wanted to do in creating the series, is that scratch that itch for you, and something that you can share with your kids and something that you'll enjoy down the road. For a group of Transformers that have always been beloved but haven't necessarily always had the spotlight, and that's the Constructicons. But that's it.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Later.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/Discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.